Hello everyone, this is Philip Carter here, and this is a mini episode of Carter's Friday Night Podcast. It's not a Friday night, but I've been struggling to find podcast guests, and I'll be honest with you, that's sort of made me lose motivation, because I really want to speak to weird people and find out what's going on inside their heads. I've been thinking a lot about stuff. I've recently finished booking my Comic-Con table for Half Planet Press. So if you're in Manchester at the end of July, you should come down. You can get some signed books. I'll sign a Who Built the Humans for you. I'll even draw in it. I don't know what I'm going to price them at the moment. I'm thinking 15 for a signed one, 10 for an unsigned one. Is that reasonable? I guess we'll find out. I'd quite like people to comment and tell me, because I'm really terrible at pricing things for events. I'm awful at it. Like, I'll either undercut myself or I will not charge enough. Wait, those are both the same thing. You can tell it's what, 1:30 in the morning, can't you? I'm out of it right now. But yeah, I've gone out recently. I've been basically spending the last of my money. Not Half Planet money, have you know, though. I've been very well behaved with Half Planet money. I've gone out and I spent like the last of my money going to gigs, and I went to one at Gulliver's in the Northern Quarter of Manchester. Met some pretty cool people there, made some new friends, and I got told basically, you know, here's some other comedy things you should go to. And I thought, yes, life is good. I can go to more things. So yeah, it seems that I'm accidentally, through the medium of poetry, getting into comedy, which is very surreal. I've got a lot of imposter syndrome about it, because I know comedians and I, you know, look up to them. I love them. I cherish them like little woodland animals. And it's a weird thing, because I remember when I was a kid watching like Frankie Boyle and Mock the Week, watching Fur TV, you know, like staying up late at night. And I'd set up the antenna in my bedroom so I could watch cable TV? I don't know what it's called. Satellite TV in my bedroom, because I didn't have it. I had a TV just for video games, but I set up like satellite TV in my bedroom so I could watch like these late night comedies without sitting with my dad, really, because he annoyed me. That's the short version. But yeah, and I'd watch these comedies and just absorb them. And even now, it's pretty much the only media I will like go and actively consume, other than like Minecraft videos and stuff like that. And it makes me think, you know, because even Who Built the Humans, which was going to be like a few short stories from Stephanie's universe to advertise her book, which I'm finishing now, all these years later. Even Who Built the Humans was. That started out quite serious, very quickly became comedic. And, you know, not everybody's got it. It's been hard to market because it mixes very dark, serious science fiction with very dark comedy science fiction. And also some jokes about God pissing himself. And it does push out a bit. And you know what, I'm no fan of trigger warnings, but I will admit to having sensitivity readers for Who Built the Humans, because I wanted to make a few like jokes at the expense of religion, and then as a twist, take the piss out of atheism at the last second, because I'm an atheist. And I just thought that'd be funny. So I tested it on a few like Christians and stuff, and they all liked it. And it just made me think, you know, I wish I had an audience for this. I wish I could read it outside. And the 15 comedy poems in Who Built the Humans, they are designed to be read on stage, but I've barely had a chance to read them. The only place I've had a long enough slot was at Switchblade in Manchester a few years ago, before coronavirus. And they wanted me to headline, but they've, you know, shit's happened. They've got a massive influx of new people, so I don't think I'm going to be on the cards anytime soon there. But it was really nice to have that 15-minute slot at the beginning, because nowhere does 15-minute slots. Everywhere's doing 5 or 10 minutes. And one individual poem from Who Built the Humans takes 15 to 20 minutes, just because of how, well, just how insane it is. In fact, you know what? Since I brought them up, it would be wrong to not read them to you, wouldn't it? So let's have a look. Let's go for one now. Wait, I've got a Who Built the Humans to hand, haven't I? I should have one to hand. There should be one in my bedroom. There usually is. There's one. Oh, a nice fresh one from the Amazon box with a new cover. Have a you can't look at the new cover because this is a podcast, but listen to the new cover. You hear that? That's gloss. You can piss on this. There's nothing. It's not gonna have any effect. This one is called On Selfhood. The inner self takes selfies while selfishly shielding the shawarma from swarms and slaves of screaming socialites. Smiling sadly as her favourite song thump thumps through the brickwork of an old mill, now repurposed as a nightclub, set to remove more clothes than it ever produced. The inner self wishes she was inside, but when she was inside, she wished she could be anywhere else. Something about love is yelled through an underfoot passageway. A man pisses diagonally into a canal, and nearby, the physical embodiment of hope throws up his pre-night out meal, alphabet spaghetti. For a second, he thinks the letters spell out the name of a girl he likes, but they don't. They spell out, "Get help." Elsewhere, a cocktail of hormones and actual cocktails is cockily corked into the hole in some asshole's soul, briefly filling and frilling an existential gap in the pages, a gap on the shelves, a gap in the innards of the inner self, a gap in the market. The inner self sighs. Not because she's tired of posting pompous photos, but because her backstabbing bastard boyfriend is calling. He's sending sorrowful sonnets, showing signs or at least some sordid semblance of humanity, hawking ham-fisted attempts at heartfelt honesty her way. He's haphazardly hearkening to an honourable history, halving historical heartaches, hoping she'll find it all heartfelt, that once again he'll be her hasty halfwit. The inner self sighs. Now the boyfriend is oozing odious odes to her ovaries, begging for breasts. She sighs as if the body he's pining for isn't hers, and it isn't. It's the idea of a person he's after, and she's barely even sure she's an idea, or even a person. He's chasing her outer self, but as you know already, unless you're a complete idiot, she is the inner self. I've said it enough times now. Catch up. She can't remember what he's apologizing for, says it's all water under the bridge, asks him to get over himself, and it's raining now, and she shields spicy strips of meat with her hands as starving seagulls sweep from stop signs and street lamps, stressing out stone students who, standing stoic at the street's edges, are still waiting for taxis they forgot to call because they were too busy trying to understand the text they just sent to their ex. The inner self skirts slowly around a sickly socialite and skewers the last of the shawarma, swatting her friend away and sniggering suspiciously as she slides aside a slice of onion, putting it on her friend's head when her back is turned, laughing as she smooths down her skirt. Slipping sideways, leaving her skirt askew, she clambers into the club again, clamors for a chorus she recognizes. Copes instead with crappy corporate claptrap crammed into crowded dance floors. This is music made for dunces, dances made for dimwits, lyrics for lackadaisical lovers lacking in expertise, funk for not yet mentioned future fuckwits. Judging by the perverse verse, it's designed for those unseemingly unversed in lovemaking and who might need it to be rehearsed, needing it explained, needing instruction for their reproduction. It's a step-by-step listed step-by-step, and the inner self is sick of it, so she's stepping out again. Later, the inner self slides silkily into a saline rainstorm that slips in slithering soliloquies into her back pocket, tap-tapping torrential tomes onto the back of her head and sneaking in its sordid sonnets. She doesn't mind, spends the rest of the evening close to home, staring up at orange streetlights, searching the sky for stories, hoping for some epic epiphany, some raucous revelation about the revelers she once revered, but now finds repulsive, repugnant, and really dull, or something else starting with R. She wanders home and wilts away, wonders if teenagers really do know anything, if they just have it beaten out of them by pounding techno-engineered in government laboratories. She wonders if aging isn't really real, but merely the external manifestation of an internal wrinkling. She imagines the human soul is like a testicle, left out in the cold, disembodied and shrinking inwardly, a shy, sad sack of sorrow, like that politician we all hate. You know the one. There's one allocated to every era. I don't need to name names. The next night, she's out again, standing in the shadows of her future self, showing off new shoes. She's all of us, stumbling into the queue for nostalgia. She's the 80s bar that only kids born in the 90s and after visit, the indie cinema where the screen is only slightly bigger than the one at home, and sometimes considerably smaller, like a disappointing affair. She is the subtitles of a foreign art film obscured by the ridiculous hair of the hipster in front. But none of this matters. All of our inner selves will pretend to be interested, crammed onto reclaimed pews like church tuna, praying the boy or girl beside us asks us out later, but knowing they won't. We wait in line to be taken into a corner and be called different by someone who only made a move on us because they thought we were the person they saw earlier, but we're not. We're different now, imperceptibly, but definitely different. Oh yeah, call me special, call me unique. That's what I like. Now the inner self is trapped on a night bus to the nightmarish north end of life. She's drinking chocolate milk from a late night shop and singing along to shitty songs shouted by the same swarm of socialites she saw last night. She wonders if the world ended now, if any of them would notice, if the apocalypse will just be one big party on the top of a bus going past the university she never got to go to, but always said she would. For a moment, she notices other inner selves singing confidently across the seats, signaling for her to join them, but she refuses. The inner self ponders patterns now, thinks of fractals. She thinks if most of matter is empty space, then maybe most of the soul is too. If this is true, then the gaps in her. If this is true, sorry. If this is true, then the gap she feels cannot be filled without violating some universal law, so she isn't broken at all. She's meant to be porous. The bus stop stops. The bus stops and the inner self spills out, buys yet another kebab somehow, asks for garlic sauce to fill the existential cracks, fizzy orange on the side to postpone the inevitable cosmic hangover. But it will all catch up eventually. It always does. And then at the end of that darkly comedic, massive poem, there's a choice. If the inner self tries to find love, you can turn to page 25. If a sulking selfie finds a living poem at her window, you can turn to page 37. And I'm a big fan of that. You know, it's in the middle of like a book which is really, I mean, it's like 60, 70% really serious sci-fi. And then those stories just jump at you. Like a satellite sketch, you know, there's just a recurring idea. And I place those poems in at regular intervals. So there's 47 short stories. So you get a story, and then you get one of those poems. And they're part of the 47 stories. But they're also poems, you know, they're not just stories. They're poems. They've got a poetic quality to them. They're performance pieces. They're heavy on alliteration. They have their own rules inherent that, you know, the prose doesn't. I really enjoyed writing those. They're probably the smartest poems I've ever read. Not ever read, obviously. Ever written, sorry. Probably the smartest poems I've ever written. And it's weird to think that because the serious stuff, it comes across as more clever, but really when it comes to writing comedy on paper for a book, I find it takes there's a lot more grind behind it because you've got to make every line work with every other line. Whereas like plain fiction, you can have somebody talk about an orange for 4 pages. And then the next bit, you can have a car crash, and it doesn't matter if those two bits don't like rhyme. And I'm not talking physical, like sound rhyme, I mean like conceptual rhymes. You know, you want a subversion of expectations on every line. And I did that there where every now and again I address the reader directly. That's in print, that isn't improvised, that's actually in the book. So I quite enjoy doing stuff like that. I'd like to do more of it. I'd like to add a 16th poem to those and basically get them on CD at some point. I know a friend who can do that kind of thing. So I'm in touch with her at the moment, trying to get them on CD. I think it'd be a load of fun. To be honest, getting Who Built the Humans just as a book on CD would be really cool, really old fashioned. That was a niche in, the audiobook market for about 4 weeks, wasn't it? Because they used to do them on cassettes, and then I've never seen an audiobook on CD, but they did exist. But it very quickly became a digital thing. So yeah, that was that. And to finish off, I'm going to read you a really funny one called Universal Slam Poem, which you've probably heard before, but I just enjoy reading it. Like a TV psychic, you remind me of death. Like a waiter on the bus, you have me holding my breath. Like a hero's sidekick, there's no use for you apart from dressing like a twat and dying in part two. Like a Doctor Who Dalek, your appeal is debated, but I can't wait to see you exterminated. Like a game show host, your face hurts my eyes, and I'll take your death as a consolation prize. Like a full moon, you are cold and distant. Like a dripping tap, you're meek and persistent. Like a shit pound shop tie, you're always broken, and all your words are best unspoken. Like a bad night out, you're filled with regret, but no amount of cider can make me forget the kind of face that makes me itch, the scraping voice that makes me twitch, the kind of shit you cannot flush, the kind of fox that would join the hunt. To put it lightly, I'd call you thrush, you utter debilitating, irritating cunt. Thank you for joining. Sudden change in tone there, isn't there? Really glad you joined and that you listened to all 16 minutes, 39, 40, 41, 42 seconds of this podcast. I'll see you soon. I'm going to have Jo Lyon on again because she's been a great guest in the past. But I'm looking for new guests too. So if you see this, email me at halfplanetpress@gmail.com or message me at Calling Captain Carter on Instagram. That's my new alt because I got shadow banned for telling somebody to step on a cartoon rake. I'm not sorry. I should have said worse things. So yeah, I'll see you soon. Hopefully my American tour will start before the end of this year. I'm gonna go and visit a friend and just irritate people in comedy bars in America. It just sounds like a lot of fun. I'm gonna read my jaunty little poems about bum bums. So yeah, I have got new poetry books out as well, but I don't feel like advertising them. So good luck finding them. Bye.